There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Friday. Glad to have you along. Live local talk, and it's 6.5 stories coming up in just a second. Segment of the show brought to you by our friends with Harry's. Father's Day is fast approaching, like in a day and a half, as in Sunday. And if you have not gotten something for Dad yet, even if you have gotten something for Dad yet, I got a great offer for you from our friends at Harry's. Special offer this Father's Day, get $5 off a Harry's shave set and treat yourself for the dad in your life to a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and travel cover. Just use code MOBILE at harrys.com to get that $5 off. I've talked about this over time. This is the best deal I've seen in all the years I've talked about Harry's, and it's up for grabs right now. I love shaving with Harry's. Told you over the years, I love the shave, the quality of the blades. That makes the whole thing. Everything else would just be useless window dressing if it wasn't a good shave. But lucky for us, it's a great shave. Then the price, about half of what you're paying right now at the grocery store, the pharmacy for those replacement blades. And how about the convenience of having them show up at your house at a predetermined amount? You figure out how many you need each month, and they show up. You don't have to remember to go get those late on a Sunday night before you had to get a big meeting on a Monday. Yeah, been there. Not anymore. And right now, you can give the gift to yourself or to Dad of the shave of Harry's. Father's Day special. Once again, $5 off the shave set from Harry's when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. That means you get the razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and travel cover all for just $3 plus free shipping when you use code MOBILE at harrys.com. So go to harrys.com today, use code MOBILE at checkout to claim your offer, and let them know I sent you. Helps support the show right here on Midday Mobile. All right, it is that time of the week when we arrive at 6.5 Stories.
Man,
band was on this morning.
Ready.
Or this evening. They're tight. All right, so let's talk about this. 6.5 stories. These are 6.5 of the stories that I missed from the interwebs this week.
That's right.
And you found them. Dalton Orwig is in here. He has found them. He has caught them and brought them right here for display.
That's right. I booted up the old computer this morning, checked to make sure the Wi-Fi was connected, and then just started searching for the craziest stories that have happened over the last
week.
The
stuff you need to know going into the weekend.
That's right. And I know you were just doing that Harry's read right there. And you know who could use some Harry's? The Amish.
It's true.
Amish could really
That's
use
solid. It's
a
true. No
case
argument.
Of Harry's razors. And what happens when an Amish man steals a car? Well, he promptly crashes that car because the Amish don't drive.
Right. But this one did.
This one did. He got into a car that was not his. Dateline, Jefferson County, Pennsylvania. You know, those are Amish stomping grounds up there. The Punxsutawney Borough Police Department filed criminal charges against 21-year-old Jacob J. Byler of Punxsutawney. This happened last weekend. Let's call him Punxsutawney Jake.
Okay.
They've already got Phil up there. So here's what happened. It was a day like any other day
there
in Punxsutawney.
Yeah.
Around noon last Saturday, Patrolman Wittenberg and Officer Moni, you know, Wittenberg and Moni on the case up there in Punxsutawney, they were on patrol keeping the streets of Punxsutawney clean when they observed the airbags deployed inside of a dark gray Nissan Rogue. Wasn't very rogue in this instance. They found it in a restaurant bar parking lot. We'll call it a barstrant. this was in Punxsutawney. Happened last weekend. The officers also noted that the vehicle's hood was dislodged. Not good.
These are a lot of clues. I'm catching on. There's clues here.
They said the back passenger side fender was scratched and bent and visible grass and mud debris on the vehicle. So the officers went into the barstrant where they were told by the bartender that there was an Amish man in the bar who may have driven the vehicle. Now, I don't know if this was profiling or if the bartender...
Which one is he? Well, the one with the beard and the hat and the suspenders.
The guy who looks like he's never driven before. The officers did make contact with Puxtawny Jake outside of the bar. According to the complaint, Puxtawny Jake told the officers that he could not lie because, you know, Amish people, not allowed to lie.
But they're not allowed to steal cars either, I don't think. I mean,
they're not. But
okay,
maybe
just checking.
He was feeling guilty. He told the officers he couldn't lie and that he took the car. He allegedly went to his neighbor's house with the intention of getting a ride into town. But when he noticed the keys in their vehicle, now Puxtawny, a safe place, mm-hmm. I guess safe enough to leave your keys in the vehicle.
Well, obviously not with the Amish around.
He noticed the keys in the vehicle, decided to take it, and then he reported that he lost control of the vehicle and hit an embankment, but continued driving, added that he did stop at a gas station in town for gas before continuing to the bar. You know, doing the nice neighborly thing and refilling it
before
he returned it completely damaged.
Right.
He was arraigned in court the next day on the following charges: theft by unlawful taking, receiving stolen property, and unauthorized use of a motor or other vehicle. He is now free. They gave him the option, $40,000 unsecured bail or 10 ears of corn in a jar of freshly churned butter.
Apple butter.
Yeah, he took the cash. So he did bail out. Puxtawny Jake back on the loose.
So, I mean, so if you would let down your guard, you know, be in the situation where, like a lot of people say, well, with younger people not knowing how to drive manuals, you can leave the keys in it around them. They're not going to be able to steal your vehicle. And you might get that same temptation if you're around a bunch of Amish folks and you say, listen, I can leave the keys in the car. Mm-hmm. They don't know how to drive it. Au contraire, look what could happen here.
Yeah, I mean, how much different could driving a car be than a horse carriage?
Well, obviously
turns
enough to...
a lot different.
Then the airbags don't work the same on the horses. All right,
Story two. Meanwhile, in Colorado, leave Pennsylvania, revenue for marijuana sales had their two highest grossing months.
I get a joke. Yeah. Yes.
April and May made roughly $24 million in total state revenue each month. $24 million each month. Those are the two highest grossing months they've had in Colorado since legalizing it back in 2014. And with those two huge months, they've reached a milestone. Colorado's now generated more than $1 billion in total state revenue from the legal marijuana industry.
And y'all wonder why government opinions have changed so much about marijuana. Mm-hmm. Cha-ching.
And here's some more of the stats here. More than $6 billion in total sales of cannabis since they began selling in 2014. And they're saying now the state's revenue from adult use marijuana sales has accelerated. The legal marijuana sales revenue doubled from $500 million to $1 billion in just under 2 years. It took them close to 3.5 years to get up to that $500 million mark. So you can see sales greatly accelerating in Colorado. Recently, Illinois became the 11th U.S. state to approve cannabis for recreational use. They joined mm-hmm. Washington, Alaska, Colorado, California, Maine, Massachusetts, Oregon, Vermont, Michigan, and Nevada. And of course, Washington, D.C. also has legal marijuana sales, and more than 30 states already with medical marijuana
legal. Washington, D.C.'s, it's like we joke about different laws. They make laws, but we're really not legalizing it. We're just doing this. I think if I remember, inside District of Columbia, you can't buy marijuana. Mm-hmm. You can freely share marijuana.
Decriminalize.
Yeah. Well, no, what they did is they started these things where you're a member of a marijuana club.
That's right.
Yeah, it's like Sam's, but different. It's like Costco, but different. Mm-hmm. You're a member of the club.
Different kind of Mile High Club.
Right. And you go into the club and you pay a membership to be in the club where the marijuana is free.
Mm-hmm.
This is why the law, just either legalize something or don't. Don't do something like, well, we really didn't. Well, we don't want people selling it. So then people, you pay a membership to come in there to be able to get the marijuana. Come on.
Well, the revenue's coming in Colorado and all these other states. The revenue's coming in for the state, but also gerbs. They're making a lot of gerbs. Jobs.
Yes.
They've got 2,917 licensed businesses now in Colorado. And listen to this, 41,076 individuals licensed to work in the industry in Colorado alone.
Wow.
So big numbers coming out of Colorado. And, you know, The states are an experiment, or our states like to experiment, and we like to see how they're doing. So as marijuana catches on in more states, that's what's going on in Colorado past the $1 billion revenue mark.
Wow.
Crazy.
Wow, big money.
All right, Nike was in the news this week.
Nike in the news. Okay.
Nike in the news. The athletic wear giant debuted curvy mannequins on the new women's floor at its flagship store.
I didn't laugh.
In London. It's the Oxford Street store. I know you've been there to buy some Nikes, I'm sure. They feature a plus-sized mannequin front and center, dressed in a black sports bra and matching leggings, with her hands stretching above her head, probably reaching for the cookie jar, I would imagine, with
Dalton
the plus-sized mannequin. They say the launch comes 2 years after Nike debuted a plus-size collection that includes sizes ranging from 1X to 3X. I thought Nike, 1X to 3X, that's, I thought plus size started at 4X.
I don't know. I don't know when you break into. I have to say this too. There's that good for them because the idea that number one, there's some women that fit those proportions that are gorgeous.
Yep.
And but at the same time, if somebody is going to work out with fitness equipment, you know, clothing, maybe it means that they're not in perfect shape.
Exactly.
So having a mannequin in perfect shape doesn't really play into the fact that these are people trying to get their health, you know, better. And if you need to have a BBM, a big beautiful mannequin.
Oh, okay.
If you need to have a BBM, a big beautiful mannequin to show that, hey, we're all, you know, we're all need work here. I think that's a good idea for Nike.
Yeah, and I imagine all these years with perfectly sized mannequins, you know, low.
It doesn't make sense. If you're trying to get people convinced that work out, look, here's how the clothes will look when you're working out and trying to get down to the size of that other mannequin.
Yeah, so they're getting mannequins with higher MMI. That's mannequin mass index, if you're keeping track here. And they write in the story a bit of a dig here. They say most American women qualify as plus-sized in the eyes of the fashion industry.
Well, yeah, of course.
In their eyes, of course. Two-thirds of adult American women wear a size 14 or larger. So more and more companies, not just the Nike store in London, but here in America, you've got Target, Forever 21, and American Eagle. They've introduced plus-size collections lately. And last year, Walmart, they purchased Eloquii. That's a fashion brand with, they say, on-trend plus-size clothing for women. And Nike, not the first to have a busty bust. Would that work? It's a bust, and it's busty.
Yes.
They're not the first to display one of those in their stores. Old Navy and Nordstrom, they've also had the curvy models in their stores over the past year.
Well,
I think it makes them more money, for sure, and that's the job of businesses, right?
That's right. So good for Nike. So we've learned the M mannequin mass index, MMI.
Yeah, low MMI or high MMI.
And then BBM. big beautiful mannequins. All right, we'll be right back. More of 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig right here on Midday Mobile.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here on this Friday, and we are talking 6.5 Stories. But before we get back into the mix, reminder, another great event tonight at Cottage Hill Package with New Belgium Brewing, one of the granddaddies of the craft beer world. And tonight, your chance to check out some of the new offerings from New Belgium Brewing. This starts at 6, goes till 8 o'clock tonight. They'll have their Voodoo Ranger Juicifer IPA, the Passion Fruit Kolsch, the Mural Agua Fresca Cerveza, and also some other surprises. So your chance to come out and sample those beers, maybe find a beer you like, get a six-pack, take it home with you. Give it a new home for a little while until you drink it. That's tonight, 6 to 8 at Cottage Hill Package, corner of Cottage Hill and Hillcrest, and online, cottagehillpackage.com, and make sure to like them on Facebook. All right, so we are deeply embroiled in 6.5 Stories with Dalton Norwig. Rounded the turn here, and we're on the back nine.
Yeah, story number four here. We've already talked Amish people stealing cars, Colorado's weed business, and fat mannequins. We've already gotten through all those. Now, health apps and smartwatch fitness trackers, of course, all the rage these days. Now, experts are saying that those apps that are meant to improve your sleep are likely to make the problems worse, not better. They reveal little about sleep quality, lack accuracy, and create stress, according to researchers. They also fear that people can become obsessed with default targets because they say you need those 8 hours a night, but not everybody needs 8 hours a night. Some can function on six. Some need probably 12 to 14 hours a night. This guy, who's named Dr. Guy Lechinger, he runs a sleep clinic in London. He said that monitors and labs use hundreds of electrodes and cameras, but home devices rely only on movement. And so all these people with these sleep apps see their sleep at night. He said they've developed significant insomnia as a result of sleep trackers or reading things about sleep deprivation. And by obsessing about the sleep, they're making it even more difficult to fall asleep. He said it's just as simple as falling asleep. You don't need all these trackers. Just sleep when you're tired and wake up when you're when you got to go to work and not tired. So turns out if you're obsessing over these sleep apps that you might actually be doing worse for your body than better for your body.
Yeah, so just don't do it.
That's right. Story number five here, and I would title this one From Cornholes to Gunholes if I was writing this
okay.
story.
All right.
Shooting took place late last Tuesday just east of the Keystone Fashion Mall in Indianapolis. Police say that an argument outside of a place called Drake's led to gunfire that claimed the life of this man, Jason Frazier. Court records claim the suspect, Gene Iyongabe, and a friend walked by and said something insulting to one of Frazier's three friends who were playing a game of cornhole.
That's how it starts.
The affidavit claims in response, one of Frazier's friends, quote, threw one of the cornhole bags and then exchanged words with the suspect and his friend. Say at first both sides walked away, but after sitting in their car for a few minutes, police say Iyongabe and his friend decided to get out and fight Frazier's friend. And during that fight, Iyongabe allegedly confessed to police that Frazier continued towards him and he shot Frazier one time. The suspect, who lives in Texas, was in Indianapolis training for a new job. Now he remains behind bars in the Marion County Jail without bond until they file these criminal charges. But cornhole causing a deadly dispute in Indianapolis.
Yeah, cornholers are not to be trifled with.
No, they're dangerous people.
There you go.
The cornholers. All right, we've heard of GoFundMe accounts and that are set up to raise money to build the wall on the Mexican-American border.
Yeah, we talked about it before,
And we've also seen online fundraisers selling hats and stuff like that. Now, a 7-year-old boy from Texas taking matters into his own hands.
Yeah.
This kid has raised $22,000 to pay for the border wall. He's done it by selling $2 cups of hot chocolate.
In the summer.
Well, he started in February.
Okay, I agree. Because I want this guy to be part of our sales department here. Yes.
When I first read this, I thought the same thing. I was like, selling hot chocolate in the summer, that's a bold strategy, Cotton. Benton Stevens from Austin is his name. Benton Stevens, he's from Austin. He set up shop in February outside of a mall where he peddled the hot chocolate and large Nancy Pelosi marshmallows for an extra 50 cents on the hot chocolate. And he also had smaller Beto O'Rourke marshmallows that were free. His stand's sign reads, "Proceeds help Trump build the wall." And the business grew pretty quickly. He's got those $22,000 in profits and even a line now of branded beverages like Patriot Lemonade and Freedom Hot Chocolate selling for as much as $27 a pack on his website.
Quite the entrepreneur.
Yeah, exactly. There's this other group, We Build the Wall, Inc. They've raised $22 million towards the U.S.-Mexico border wall to this point. And they celebrated Benton's contribution of $22,000 by having him at the ribbon-cutting ceremony for, I guess, they have a building there. And since he raised so much money, they had him cut the ribbon for whatever building they were opening. His mom, Jennifer, said he was inspired to start raising cash after he watched the State of the Union address. She said he heard the president say, "We need to close our borders. We need to protect our country. We need to make it safer." But, of course, not everybody happy to see a kid out there selling money, selling hot chocolate to raise money for the wall. She said a guy yelled at him and called him a little Hitler. So he knows that there are people against it. He still wants to do it. He stands by it, and we're going to stand right by him. And his goal is to raise another $28,000 and get to $50,000.
Seriously, we need to get a letter out to him, see if he's interested in a career in radio sales.
Selling hot chocolate in Texas in the summer.
Yeah, if he can do this, get him on board here fast.
Quite the entrepreneur. All right, that brings us to story 6.5. It's where I give you half the story and you fill in the rest.
Okay.
So let's let it rip. A teenager in Canada last week was clocked going 105 miles per hour in his Camaro when police pulled him over. Sean, everybody, what was his excuse for going so fast? 105 miles per hour in his Camaro. 16 years old, already has a Camaro somehow, but was clocked going 105. Why did he tell the police that he was speeding?
That he had to go so fast?
Mm-hmm.
And not to go get hot chocolate in Texas.
This is in Manitoba, Canada, if that helps at all.
He's being chased by a moose.
That's a great guess. Uh-huh. Actually, no, you're not very close. he was driving the Camaro 105. That's when the Royal Canadian Mounted Police clocked his speed and pulled him over. That must have been a fast horse.
Yes.
To pull over a Camaro going 105. Police said the teen told him he had eaten too many hot wings and needed to use the bathroom right away. The excuse did not work. He received a $966 fine for speeding.
Happens to the best of us out there. That's 6.5 stories right here on Midday Mobile. Thanks, man. Have a good weekend.
You too. Happy Father's Day.
All right, coming right back. Talk about the Great Alabama 650, a canoe race, 650-mile canoe race.
Hey, it's Sean Sullivan, and you're listening to an encore edition of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5. Also online at fmtalk1065.com. And say hi to me over at twitter.com, where you'll find me at fmtalk1065. Now, on with the show, encore style.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5. Glad to have you along. And come out and see us here at Battleship Memorial Park on the fantail of the USS Alabama. What a great place to do a radio show. This is what, the third in 2 months I've done out here? More of this, please, that's for sure. And actually, this might be a place that coming up in September, you could be posted up to watch a whole line of canoes, kayaks, and maybe even stand-up paddleboards come by you in a race that is epic. I think, you know, that word gets thrown around so often out here, but I think in this case, you can talk about this race being an epic race. Alabama Scenic River Trail has their Great Alabama 650 coming up in September. Now, what is that 650? Well, we'll ask Greg Wingo more about that. He joins us now. Hey, thanks for your time, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
The Great Alabama 650 what?
650 miles of paddling. It is the longest paddle race in the United States, and racers are coming from all over the world to tackle our water and see if they can be the winner.
You know, this is, we're blessed with this, obviously. People can say, look no further than the seal of the great state of Alabama, and you look at all the rivers on there. So we are blessed with so many rivers, and that's something celebrated through Alabama Scenic River Trail. So we'll back up for a second, too, and tell people about the Alabama Scenic River Trail. Even if you're not talking about competing in a tournament or a race here, there's a lot of ways for folks to get out and enjoy the rivers in the state.
That's exactly right. You know, we really are, like you said, we're really blessed to have a large amount of water here in the state of Alabama. In fact, we have over 5,300 miles of paddable water, mapped paddable water in the state of Alabama. It makes us the number one state in the country for mapped paddable water. So, you know, adventure enthusiasts, paddle enthusiasts, people that just love being out on the water in general, can all have plenty of opportunities and places throughout the state to go to get on lots of different types of water.
Yeah, and we'll put those links up as well, but AlabamaScenicRiverTrail.com, you can go there. And it was great when y'all launched this because those of us that are paddling enthusiasts had cobbled together either stories from folks in our home water is one thing, but, you know, if you want to travel elsewhere in the state to go paddle, stories from folks up there, or there were a couple of paddling resource books that said, okay, here's one section from this put in to this tank out and all these things. But y'all put all this together in one place where we can look at the whole state. You got the mapping on there. This is really great, so people can plan a trip.
That's exactly right. You can go onto our website and you can find pretty much any type of water, any type of place to put in, take out, like you mentioned. All throughout the state, we have maps that give really good detail on where to go. And it all started a decade ago when we established the first 650 miles, the actual original Alabama Scenic River Trail. But since then, we've mapped so many more miles of waterways throughout the state.
So that's 650 miles, the Great Alabama 650. That's the racetrack for this race. Walk people through the geography from start to finish and what this race will entail.
Definitely. So the Great Alabama 650 is, like we said, a 650-mile-long point-to-point race. So it's going to start up on Weiss Lake in northeast Alabama. It will continue down through the Coosa River, passing, you know, cities like Gadsden, on down through Childersburg and past Wetumpka and Montgomery. It meets up with the Alabama and continues on down. And then you hit the Mobile Bay eventually and finishes out at Fort Morgan. So you have a wide variety of types of water that racers or just paddling enthusiasts can take advantage of. It starts out with a little bit of white water. Then you get a good amount of flat water with the different lakes that paddlers have to go through. And then, you know, the last 100 miles, I would say, is probably the most difficult portion of the race. You have that tidewater coming into the Delta region, and so you're dealing with a lot of, you know, headwinds and some commercial traffic, and so it's quite a bit of a challenge. But we have, like I said, we have racers coming from all over the world that are excited to tackle this challenge and to vie for over $20,000 in money.
Wow. And I'm just thinking about the geography difference too. You laid this out, whether you're talking about the Delta, but you're starting up there with the whitewater section. You're, you know, at Lake Weiss up there, rocky, you know, foothills of the Appalachian mountains there, the whole way to the sandy spit that we love right here in our own backyard at Fort Morgan. That's a big change. It kind of tells the story of the diversity in our state.
That's exactly right. You know, we were recently named the number one most biodiverse state in the country. And if we're just talking about from a waterway standpoint, we have probably the most diverse waterways in the entire country as well. So many different options and things to see and different types of water to tackle. And so, you know, it's really exciting that we're able to put on this event and get people from outside of the state to come here and experience it, but also, you know, showcase it to others in the state of Alabama that either may not be aware that this is something that we have going on, or just in general from a recreational standpoint, that there's so many different bodies of water in our state that people can take advantage of.
All right. And Greg, as a guy that's toying with the idea of maybe throwing my hat in the ring for this race, 650 miles in 10 days. Now, I was not a math major in college, but to me that looks like averaging 65 miles a day. 65 miles a day is a lot of paddling.
It is. It is a lot of paddling. And I think there are definitely endurance racers out there that is something that they feel very confident in being able to do. I think the biggest thing is you have to understand the geographical layout of our state and those bodies of water that you're going to be traveling, and you have to be able to wisely pick out where you can make up as much mileage as possible on a given day. There's certainly areas where you're going to get, you know, hit with those headwinds, like at the bottom of the state, that are going to make it a whole lot harder to move through. But yes, 65 miles a day is the average that you would need to get through in 10 days. We anticipate, though, that we'll see some finishers somewhere in that 7 to 8 day range.
Wow. Wow. And we're talking about teams here, too, although I want to get into that. I think there are people who could do it a single paddler, but it seems like to make this possible, you need somebody paddling at all times, one person sleeping, one person paddling.
Yeah, so we have three different categories. We have male solo, we have female solo, and then we have two-person team. It can be any gender. And so, you know, essentially a lot of these solo paddlers feel like they have a really good chance at finishing and or, you know, finishing a whole lot faster than we all think they can. You know, a lot of it is just dependent on how well they manage their sleep and their nutrition that they're going to be taking in throughout the route. But, you know, those two-person teams, you're exactly right. You know, at some point, someone's probably going to have to snooze a little bit while the other person's kind of pulling the weight to get there to the end. But like I said, you know, everybody's probably going to have, you know, several crew members that are going to be there that are really the unsung heroes of any, you know, individual or team that's tackling this. You know, those are the people that are meeting them along the way and making sure that they're, you know, hydrating properly, getting their fuel, setting up camp, for where they sleep along the way, and making sure that those racers can, you know, safely and quickly get to the finish.
Just joining us, talking to Greg Wingo with the Alabama Scenic River Trail and this great Alabama 650 race happening in September. Now, yeah, you're kind of describing like a paddler's version of a NASCAR pit crew, right? Those people that will be in support.
That's exactly right. Yeah, everybody, all the solo paddlers are required to have at least one crew member. The teams aren't required to have crew, but the vast majority of them will have crew. It makes it a whole lot more manageable if you have somebody helping you out logistically on the land, and being able to do some of that work for you, get you set up so that you can just focus on paddling the entire way. And it is very similar to a pit crew style situation. They're trying to get their paddlers everything to them as quickly as possible and get them back out on the water so that they can win this thing.
You know, something you and I talked about before we went on here is that this is open to, well, at least three different types of paddled watercraft, right? Canoes, kayaks, and stand-ups, stand-up paddleboard?
Stand-up paddleboard.
What?
Well,
really? Really? I mean, I know that, you know, my kids think it's way cooler than any canoe or kayak, but if somebody finishes the race on a stand-up paddleboard, I'm going to be impressed.
Well, trust me, if somebody finishes this thing on a stand-up paddleboard, I'm going to be the first one there to give them a big hug because they are going to have, you know, suffered mightily to get there. But that said, there's quite a few endurance stand-up paddleboarders out there, and this is certainly something that, you know, they, you know, I think that they definitely see as a bucket list item to tackle. That said, racers are allowed to change out watercraft throughout the race, so you might start out on a stand-up paddleboard and then finish in a kayak. Perfectly doable. The only thing is it must be human powered. It can't be motorized or sail power or even foot power. It does have to be, you know, it does have to be paddled. But they're allowed to change out as many different vessels as they want to based on the different types of water that they have to encounter.
This is an event, obviously, for the racers, but what about spectators? You talk about the portages that are going to happen and things. These are by some major hydroelectric dams. Is this something that people, if they're not competing, will come out and be able to see these racers?
Definitely. Yeah, the problem with the portages or the
and I guess we should explain, dams. Yeah, we should explain portages for folks. A portage is what?
So a portage is an area in which the racers are going to have to get out of the water and go around some sort of obstacle. And so in our state, those obstacles are our hydroelectric dams, particularly located in the northern and central region of the state. So there are dams that cause us to be able to have Weiss Lake and Logan Martin Lake and Lay Lake and Mitchell and Jordan. And so as paddlers come to those dams, they have to portage around them. That's that term for taking out the boat out of the water, walking around to the other side of that dam, and putting back in the water. And so during that 10-day period, racers are on the clock the entire time. They're on the clock when they're paddling, when they're sleeping, when they're eating, anything they're doing. The only time that they're not on the clock is when they're going through one of those portage areas. And that gives them just a little bit of downtime to be able to safely move around those hydroelectric dams. But spectators that want to watch the race, there are plenty of places throughout, particularly on those lakes that I mentioned. There's plenty of opportunity to be able to see those racers come through, especially in the early portions of the race when the racers are closer together. As the race moves on over the period of days, they're going to spread out quite a bit. But you could be standing at the waterfront in Montgomery and be able to see racers come through there. Certainly down along the eastern shoreline in the bay, you'll be able to see them, you know, hugging that shoreline as close as they possibly can to get around to Fort Morgan. So there's definitely going to be plenty of spectator opportunities. And we're going to have a map on our website that's tracking the racers throughout. So you'll be able to, you know, go on there, find a racer. You may even choose to, you know, treat it like horse racing and pick a racer and see if they're going to be the winner. and you can follow along on that map where they are at any given time and go out there and watch them.
All right. Remind folks, too, because we're going to talk about this more as it gets closer, but if they want to go to the website, get more information, maybe they want to sign up to compete or get more information to pick their winning horse, how do they do it?
The website is al650.com, al650.com, and the race actually kicks off September 14th and goes for a full 10 days. And you can go on that website now and see a map detailing all the different mileage of the race, as well as those portage spots we discussed. Anybody interested, just like you, that wants to register for the race can go on there now and register and get a good feel for what we're doing. And as we get closer to September, we'll be adding quite a bit of features to that website, including that mapping feature that I mentioned where you can track the racers throughout.
All right, Greg, we're going to check back with you soon throughout the summer, get updates on this, but I sure appreciate you bringing this to our attention, and I can't wait to talk more about it.
Fantastic. Thanks for having me.
All right, there it is, y'all, and I'll try to put that link up on my Twitter feed here in just a second. Great Alabama 650, 10 days, 650 miles of paddling through the state of Alabama. How about that? Coming right back, more Midday Mobile right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5 and my buddy Ed Rowan from Taylor Martino back in studio. Thanks for coming in.
Hey, Sean. Thanks for having me.
Last time we were talking about these faulty earplugs from 3M, and you said, hey, hold on, I'll come back because I got an event to go to in Washington, and this was a hearing in Washington, a MDL hearing?
Yes, we attended a hearing in Washington, D.C. at the federal court there, and there's a panel of judges. And they consolidated and sent the 3M earplug cases down to the federal court system in Pensacola under a judge there named Casey Rogers, a lady judge.
And we hit rewind for a second, though. If people didn't hear us talk about it last time, this all stems from issuance of earplugs that people in the military, this was the general issue, right? These earplugs.
Yes. From 2003 to 2015, 3M and another company that they bought out called Aero Technologies supplied the military with these defective earplugs, and it caused hearing loss for the troops that were wearing those earplugs.
Okay, so these were the earplugs, not that the troops chose to use. This is what they were issued. And you, as a Marine, as a veteran, I know this quite well, that you don't get to choose your boots, you don't get to choose your helmet, you don't get to choose your earplugs.
Right. You may not like what's issued to you, but that's what you have to wear. And you can either wear it and be a regular soldier or Marine, or you can do push-ups and get thrashed around and get sent to the brig or whatever happens. But yes, if you're issued something, you have to wear it.
All right. So since last time we talked, you were on the forefront of this, y'all, with Taylor Martino, I mean, right at the beginning of it. People by now may have heard some of the news accounts of this. Let's kind of go through some of the things that are known. So 3M has agreed, right, that these were faulty earplugs.
Yes. So last summer, 3M was sued by the federal government in a whistleblower lawsuit. And what that is where any entity or company defrauds the government can sue that company for that fraud. And so 3M was sued, and then in October, November, they settled that lawsuit very quickly. Now, obviously, they don't admit that they're at fault if they settle, but why else would you pay $9.1 million if you did not defraud the government?
So as people hear this, and it may affect them or a loved one with hearing loss that was issued these earplugs, The question of whether the feds believe this was faulty or not, that's already been answered.
Correct. I mean, the documents are out there, and there's a lot more to discover. As a matter of fact, a couple of the things that I would say infuriate me is apparently two of the key governmental players in purchasing and supposedly testing these earplugs. They soon after the contract was made with 3M, they went to work for 3M making large salaries. And so I think there is an element of corruption that could possibly be there. And I certainly want to find out, and other lawyers involved, we want to find out, how and why that happened.
this is a lot of people that could be affected. You're talking about over a decade, is it 12 years here, right? So 2003 to 2015, this was the issue deer plug.
Yes, I mean, you're talking about the basis of the military is to use arms to defend our country. So the essential function of the military is there are going to be loud noises out there. And so you would hope that the earplugs that are sold to the government work. And these earplugs did not work. And 3M and Aero Technology knew they didn't work, but they just ignored that. It's pure corporate profit over the safety of our servicemen.
And if you're hearing this right now or you have a loved one, once again, 03 to 2015, it's a lot of people affected by this. Now, so I did the review, but I want to come back to what I started with. So you're back from Washington, you went to the hearing, and now you mentioned this is set in federal court in Pensacola. Is this one of many courts that's doing this, or is this where this moves to?
It's a sort of a technical federal procedural tool where if you have something that happens to a large number of people over the whole country, the federal court system doesn't want separate cases being tried all over the country, because then you're going to get all kinds of rulings on all of these, you know, it's common issues. So what they do, it's called multi-district litigation, is they consolidate for pretrial purposes all of the cases under one judge. And so for pretrial purposes, all of these cases have been sent to Judge Casey Rogers, the Northern District of Florida, right here in Pensacola in our backyard.
Wow. Okay. So then the next question, because this is federal, it doesn't matter that it's in Florida. This doesn't mean just for Florida people or just for Alabama people. This is going to be for, right, service members from all 50 states.
Yes. I mean, we're representing people from just about every state in the country. I mean, they're all over. You know, if you're in the military, one of the cool and unique things about being in the military is just interacting with people from all over, from all walks of life. You know, when you start off, they all have a shaved head in the Marines. Mm-hmm. They all have the same camouflage. There could be, you know, a guy from Brooklyn sleeping next to and fighting next to a guy from backwoods Alabama like myself. So it's really cool. I remember one guy from Brooklyn, I was in the Marines. He didn't know that you have to put bug spray on when you go out in the woods, and he had 26 ticks on his body. So we taught him about putting bug spray on. You know about that, Sean, right?
That's right. That's right. This is okay. So if there was ever something you were born to do, Ed, I mean, seriously, an attorney, but a Marine, this is the case.
Yeah. I mean, the Marines taught me so much, you know, in my life, and just never to give up, never to stop, never quit. You know, the patriotism that goes along with that, and just serving my country was a fantastic experience for me. But so I love helping vets however I can in any situation. And when I get to help vets in a legal context, I just love it. I mean, I'm fired up about it. And I understand their individual issues, having been there. And so having an opportunity where so many vets were taken advantage of and harmed, their hearing was harmed because of a greedy corporation, I'm very, very excited in pursuing this litigation. And we're handling every case from beginning to end. We're going to help prosecute the civil litigation. We're going to be hands-on every day, helping with every aspect of this case until it ends.
You speak the language for sure. So somebody hearing us right now, or themselves or a loved one or a friend that is in this window of time, let's talk about how they get on the phone, come to see y'all, get a meeting with a fellow veteran to discuss this.
I would just say Google us at Taylor Martino Law Firm, Mobile, Alabama, and you will certainly find our website, and you can find our number and give me a call. You know, we've got Amanda Summerlin, who's our dedicated, what we call a mass torts lawyer. That's all she does, 100%. And then we've got three paralegals that are dedicated to this case as well. So call us, and if available, I'd love to talk with you, or anybody else can talk with you there as well.
Very good. Ed, thank you as always for the update. Thanks for your time. Thanks for what you're doing.
Great to be here, Sean. Thank you.
All right, Ed Browning with Taylor Martino.
No representation is made that legal services performed are greater than the quality of legal services of others.